Hello, and welcome to another edition of the BullersDesk.com political podcast. This time around, Rick Epps and myself recorded the podcast at the Old Trolley Barn Park in University Heights. We were joined by San Diego City Councilman Kevin Faulkner. Kevin talked with me early Sunday morning over the phone before the podcast recording. Of course, San Diego Mayor Bob Filner's sexual harassment scandal is top of things he wanted to talk about. However, I did get him to touch on a few things that are being overshadowed by the scandal. Along with the Filner fiascos, we talked about the Tourism Marketing District, the prevailing wage vote, and a bit of party politics. But he is pushing big time, but in a very polite kind of way, for Filner to resign, along with nearly everyone on the council. That's not everyone, that's nearly everyone, Republican or Democrat. As always, if you want to hop on your soapbox, you can do that by hopping on ours. Give us a call, 619-663-4531, 619-663-4531. Now, from the Old Trolley Barn Park in University Heights, the Bowler's Desk political podcast with me, Matt Bowler, and the political professor, Rick Epps.
So another political podcast. We are at Old... What is this? What the hell is the name of this place again?
Old Trolley Barn Park.
And this is University Heights.
Yep.
Right near the original San Diego State.
Yeah.
So
yeah, right down the street.
You taught there, right?
What yeah, 100 like? Years ago. Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to hang in here for an old guy, you know?
They did a concert here Friday night. We almost came.
Almost, huh?
Well, we fell asleep. The kid went to bed. We had our, because it was our 16th anniversary.
Oh, congratulations, man. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. And so we had our anniversary thing, and I had each had like half a glass of wine and then fell asleep.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what happened.
Wow, that sounds really romantic.
Yeah, man. It is.
Yeah.
It is. It was.
But your wife loved that, right?
Uh-huh, she did. She fell asleep first, so she was perfectly okay with it.
So, oh man! Yeah. Oh man!
I know. So it's been a crazy week locally.
Yeah.
Especially with Filner, and what I did this morning is I was able to talk to Kevin Faulkner, mm-hmm. District 2, which is now, because of the way they've redrawn it, is sort of Donna Frye's old district, sort of not, you mm-hmm. know, because of the way they drew the lines. He's got the beach areas and parts of downtown.
Mm-hmm.
So what I wanted to do was play that for you here. It's a pretty decent conversation. I caught him, and I guess he's training for some 100-mile bike ride.
Oh wow!
So that's his new thing now. But it has nothing to do with what we're talking about. But I thought it was just interesting.
Wow, that is interesting.
Yeah.
Good for him. I skipped spin class this morning, which I feel really guilty about. I want you to know.
I know.
Yeah.
We've started swimming again now regularly, which is what we always did.
But look, the kiddie pool doesn't count. I'm sorry, Matt. The kiddie pool doesn't count.
We take turns. She holds the kid, and I do some laps, and then I hold the kid, and she does some laps. We have to take turns.
Are you finally get off the water wings?
Uh-huh. I finally did. So here we go. This is Kevin Faulkner, 7 a.m. I think he was in his car. I think actually when he talked to me, he called me from his car.
Oh, cool.
Before going on his ride. So here we go.
So I appreciate you joining me this morning. So what I'll do is we'll record this, and then I'll most likely play the whole thing inside our podcast, and then this way Rick and I can talk about this.
Sure.
Your segment was on. We had Francine Busby on last week, and she described her week as being intense, to say the least. And I'm sure it's been a little different for you. Can you kind of sort of describe for us what happens to, you know, you're a Republican city councilman, and you have basically what used to be Donna Frye's district, right? More or less.
Portions of it. I'm fortunate enough to represent the beach areas, Mission Beach, Ocean Beach, mm-hmm. Pacific Beach, and Mission Bay, and part of Claremont.
Yeah. So it's similar, but since the lines have been redrawn, it's not quite the same district anymore, but it's close. Everybody always thought that the beach areas were traditionally Democratic, and then, you know, it's not true.
Absolutely. I mean, what you see is common sense, people really strong on environmental issues, but also fiscal issues, which has dominated the city for so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially down there. I think that it shows how kind of the demographic is changing in those areas, you know. It's no more like a PB's not about Biff and Skippy anymore. If you've been in town long enough to remember them. Do you remember Biff and Skippy?
Oh, of course.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I was still a little kid then, but I remember Biff and Skippy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So talk to me about what happens from your perspective when this kind of thing goes on with the mayor, because I can't think of a bigger scandal like this within the mayor's office that has gone on since maybe Roger Hedgecock, you know?
Well, I mean, it makes it extremely difficult. We have a mayor now who has effectively lost his ability to govern, is not putting the city's best interests front and center. If he did, he would resign. But he hasn't done that. He's putting his ego in front of San Diego. And it's been very difficult down at City Hall, make no mistake. We've got so much uncertainty. We've got the eyes of the nation on San Diego for all of the wrong reasons. And yet, at the same time, we have a city to run. And so what we try to do our best on the council, in a bipartisan manner, is to make sure that we are doing everything we can to make sure that the basic services of city government are working, whether that's picking up the trash, libraries, rec centers, public safety. But make no mistake, without a mayor, without a full-time mayor, it's very difficult.
So I've been hearing that this kind of behavior from Filner has been going on for years. Have you heard anything like that?
Well, you've heard a lot of that now, certainly, over the last...
Well, yeah, I mean, 2009, I think, is the earliest one. But, I mean, I've heard this kind of bullying of his staff, the stuff that Vince Hall was talking about.
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen is we've seen everybody come out of the woodwork, particularly in the last couple of weeks, saying those people that had known him before he was mayor, talk about his abrasiveness, talk about bullying, none of which are traits that you would want to lead a city.
How does something like this go on for so long?
Well, I mean, I asked myself that as well. I mean, I'm not somebody who supported Bob Filner. And, you know, the fact that I thought his agenda was wrong for San Diego, I thought his approach was wrong for San Diego. Now we have a lot of people that come out and say, yeah, we wish we would have listened. So, you know, when you're mayor, your job is to govern the city and to bring people together. I mean, San Diego, fairly, we have a lot of Democrats, a lot of Republicans, a lot of Independents, as you would expect in coastal California. And so, a style that brings people together is usually the style that is going to make sure you actually push an agenda and move policy forward. This mayor, ever since he was elected, it's been one fight after another, and where you look at the fight for the city attorney, the fight over the tourism marketing district, and now, of course, these horrible allegations on sexual harassment. It's no way to run a city, plain and simple.
So, but I mean, it just seems so bizarre to me that he would. Is this part of the kind of the culture of politics that people allow, men and women in position like this to kind of get away with more?
Well, my answer is no.
From your experience, I mean, I'm not saying in general. You can only speak from your experience.
Yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to be on the council for 7 years, and most of my time is spent under Jerry Sanders as mayor. And Jerry Sanders, far from being a polarizing personality, was absolutely more of a steady, calming influence. And particularly in the midst of all of the financial scandals that we were dealing with the city. I played a large part in working with him to try and turn the ship around, and we have. And what's so unfortunate is that now with Bob Filner, we're being drawn back into this kind of national ridicule and national embarrassment that San Diego just doesn't deserve. I mean, we are better. We're so much better as a city and as residents and what Bob Filner's been putting us through these last couple weeks.
So what do you think is worse for him legally, the Paris scandal or the sexual harassment? You know, well, I mean, the U.S. attorney's looking into the Paris scandal, but they're not looking into these sexual harassment allegations, as I understand it.
Well, I think the answer is, you know, both of them are going to have to play out. I mean, we have these horrible allegations. Numerous women who have been victimized by his behavior over years. And we've seen almost every day somebody else comes forward with some just, you know, startling revelations about how this man treated women. We also then, of course, have this, and it's something on the Paris issue that I've been pushing on as the city's audit committee. You know, the rules have to apply to everybody. And why I've been so pushing on the Paris issue is because our independent city auditor did an audit of these city credit cards a year ago, made some changes about how they should be used and not used. And we got to get to the bottom and get some real answers. You know, the mayor of San Diego should not be flying to Paris anyway.
Well, I mean, he'd gone there before, and this is part of some a part of a pro-Iranian democracy movement. And he'd gone there before as congressman.
Sure.
So why is it different? Why is it different?
When you're a congressman dealing with federal issues and national issues, I could see that. When you're the mayor of San Diego, and then you ostensibly say you were going over there to promote jobs, well, then what did you do? What jobs did you promote? The mayor has not come forward on any of those issues. Instead, what we saw is this group wasn't a nonprofit group. He finally came out and admitted that. I'm not going to allow taxpayers to be on the hook for a junket that this mayor had no business going over there and doing, particularly in the midst of everything else that we're dealing with in San Diego.
Yeah, Voice of San Diego had this really good story about the stories that the scandal swallowed, right? And I guess the Paris trip was definitely one of them. And TMD, you touched on earlier. Now, the mayor had a plan for the TMD to essentially get them their money back, but they had to agree that none of the funding would come out of the general fund.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very long and involved process. I use the TMD as an example of it shouldn't have been that way. I mean, we had this ongoing fight.
How long has the TMD been around?
It's been around for over 5 years.
Okay.
San Diego was actually one of the first cities to move forward with the tourism marketing district. And now what we've seen, because San Diego's been so successful, we have cities up and down the state that have replicated what we've been doing. And good for those cities, but at the same time, it's more competition now as you're trying to, you know, attract people into your city. And so what was so unfortunate from my standpoint on that is, you know, these public fights and the back and forth and the mayor holding money and therefore we're not marketing the city. I mean, that's just, you know, back to our earlier point. It's no way to get things done. You know, if you have disagreements with people, bring them in, hammer it out, and move forward. But the constant battles back and forth, I thought, did not serve our city well at all.
Do you think, I mean, DeMaio was known as a fighter as well. I mean, they were both known as being very aggressive personalities.
Yeah, and you can be passionate in politics. And you can have strong convictions, and you can have strong beliefs. But at the same time, to actually be effective and to get things done, I found it better to work with people, be up straight, be honest with them, and have integrity. That's usually a better way to actually accomplish goals.
There's something very interesting about all of these accusers. At this point, I'm only really considering the first eight. This ninth woman that came out, I feel like, is a totally different circumstance, although it's not. Doesn't mean it's any right, any you know, doesn't mean that it was right or not, but I think she's still, I think that's a different, totally different context than the other women. All of these women are, it seems almost coordinated in a way. Are you hearing that they're
no,
organized? Is there some sort of organizing body behind all of them?
You know, and I'd be very surprised if that was the case. It is so difficult for a woman to come forward, you know, particularly publicly, if you've been the subject and the victim of this type of behavior. And the fact that these women have come forward, I think is courageous, number one. But we've seen these women who are leaders of our community that have said this behavior was wrong. And they're coming forward to say, encouraging others that may have been victims of this behavior to come forward as well. I mean, the sheer numbers are shocking. It's terrible for our city. And like I said, the person that knows what he needs to do is Bob Filner, and he needs to resign. And yet he continues to avoid, not speak with the media. Now he's in rehab or whatever you want to call it for several weeks. And, you know, I want the mayor to get the help that he needs, but he needs to do it as a private citizen, not drag the city of San Diego with him.
So let me see. I also wanted to go over this a little bit of the prevailing wage issue here too, and how that's affecting the city budget as well.
Sure.
It was a close vote, right?
Yeah, it was. And, you know, if you look at the prevailing wage vote and pay particular attention to the very detailed report that the city's independent budget analyst did, mm-hmm. it was devastating towards what this will mean in terms of increased costs to our city. You know, they talk about all the infrastructure projects that won't be done next year by paying this additional dollars. They talked about 44 miles of street.
So what's the difference? So how much are we talking to a guy who paves the road? Because the way the city works is the city puts up a bid, and then a contractor bids on the project, and then that contractor gets approval to do that project. So this is kind of this bidding process, right? It's not like the city's paying these guys paving the roads.
That's right.
Directly,
they estimated that by paying this so-called prevailing wage, you would increase the city's costs conservatively from 5 to 10%. And in fact, in some other cities that have it, it's been shown that it's much more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at San Diego, that has not done a good job on its infrastructure, we're finally investing the dollars that we should be. To say that we're going to raise our cost 10% just makes no sense. The IBA pointed that out. We had several of my colleagues that agreed that have really focused on infrastructure. Why on earth would we be paying more for the same services that we're getting? And, you know, we need to make sure that we're getting quality work, quality projects, they're being inspected, and most importantly, that we're providing value for taxpayers.
Was this vote split along party lines?
So it was split along party lines, and I think that's unfortunate because I think, you know, obviously the prevailing wage was very important to those in the labor union community. But I felt equally as passionate on the taxpayer side of the ledger, which is we need to be investing our dollars in neighborhoods and to raise our costs, particularly when we're so far behind on infrastructure in the city, approximately $1 billion. To add those increase in costs right now is not something that this city can afford.
Do you think now with this scandal and all the other things that the Republican Party has a chance to win back a lot of the women, sort of the suburban housewife voters that have kind of moved over to the Democratic Party?
You know, I haven't looked at it from the partisan lens because, like I said, when you look at what's going on with the mayor, you know, it's not a Democrat or a Republican issue. It's just a common sense, you know, get this guy out of here. You know, it has nothing to do with political parties. It all it has to do with the individual. You know, I think as we go forward, San Diegans want City Hall to continue the efforts that we started on reform, particularly pension reform, fiscal reform. And while we've made a lot of headway, we're not done yet. And unfortunately, we've had a mayor and an administration that has ignored the need to continue to move forward. I've been holding them accountable, and I'm going to continue to as long as I'm on the council.
All right. All right, there we go.
Interesting.
Yeah. You run back. Here I come.
All right. Welcome back, man.
Yeah, don't panic. I had actually run over behind the camera to make sure that was all working correctly.
Yeah, thanks. You left me here by myself. Thanks, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you can hold the camera. You can deal with it. But there were a few points I thought were really interesting. I mean, he seems to be, you know, he's going with what everybody else says as far as the sexual harassment stuff. What I'm interested in is how he's interpreting this within his sort of his party context.
Yeah.
And I found that to be the most interesting part of this at this point in time. Of course, he's interested in having, you know, everybody wants Filner to resign, and almost unanimously everyone's calling for him to resign at this point.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that how it's gained such national attention. I mean, it's funny.
It's on every Colbert Report. Yeah, I know. Colbert turned into a joke.
Yeah, Bill Maher had him on. I mean, but it's interesting because the first week or so, maybe a couple of weeks, it was more of a local.
It was kind of a localized story.
Yeah. And now it's taken on a national, especially him and Wiener's Wiener, you know.
Well, they're perfect. It's coast-to-coast inappropriate behavior.
But what happened to the Midwest? Have we left the Midwest?
I know. There's
got to
be
somebody in the Midwest.
Somebody in Chicago, I'm sure. Is it still Daly in Chicago?
There must be a sheep in Oklahoma who can tell.
I can't even remember his mayor. But I thought it was interesting how, you know, on all of the issues, though, it still seems to be a partisan split council, right? When you get when you get past the sexual harassment stuff and you talk about the TMD and you're talking about prevailing wage, they're partisan issues now.
Yeah, you can see they're clearly divided. At least according to how Kevin sort of laid out his argument, it seems very clear that there is a very partisan agenda there. The question is, I'm interested, I wonder why.
Well, I mean, they're two like typical partisan issues, though, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you've got labor, and then how business is using the city in a way, because the TMD is a 2% surcharge on every hotel room in the city, and then those hotel room owners, those hotels executives or hotel owners or whatever they are, they're the ones that kind of run the TMD, and then they hire the people. The city takes in the money from that as though it's a hotel room tax, even though it's not a tax.
Yeah.
They take in the, it's not classified as a tax, but they control it as though it is.
So exactly.
Kind of by de facto becomes one. It's like if you live as though you're married, you're married.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if you want to split up and you've got a kid.
Exactly.
you know, ask any divorce lawyer.
Yeah.
Then that money goes into the city. The city's supposed to give that money back to the TMD. So the TMD can do things like make and buy ads in other markets, promoting the hotels that the people that run the TMD own.
Yeah.
Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
And what I don't understand is why can't they buy their own ads, number one?
Well, that'd be a good question.
Why shouldn't they be funding this thing on their own to begin with? Why is the city now? I suppose the other argument is, it helps build the economy, brings tourism to San Diego, and that builds jobs and all that. But ultimately, I really wonder what kind of jobs are being built.
Exactly. Plus, you figure that the hotel owners are actually passing on that cost to the people.
Consumer.
Are,
they just tack it on to the room bill. So it's not like it's costing them anything.
Exactly. And I think it's still also very troubling when your economy is built on just a particular industry. And San Diego's economy, while it's not the only industry, and I'm not suggesting that, you know, so much of what drives people here is you know, the weather. And it's, you look downtown, look downtown at the high rises, there are more hotels and condos than there are businesses, and I think that's a very telling notion of a city, is just the health of a city in terms of its economic viability. You just can't live on your tourism economy.
I think about like countries like Jamaica that are comparable in size to San Diego, right?
Yeah.
I mean, population wise geographically and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And essentially that's the only thing they've got going there is tourism. And it's just a horrible thing to use as a cornerstone of your economy, because it's maybe one suit lower middle class job for what, every 20 lower class jobs?
You know,
I mean, it doesn't.
So you can't build an economy with minimum wage workers. You know, and I mean, Mexico in some ways is the same way. I mean, most of what drives Mexico's economy is all the coastal,
the
coastal cities. You know, Acapulco and Cancun and Ixtapa and Cozumel, and all those places.
And Veracruz and all those places. Tourism. I mean, now you can say, oh, well, there's maquila industries and things like that in Tijuana, and that's true to a degree.
Yeah.
But they're there for low labor costs, which, again, kind of feeds back into what we're talking about. And then that I see as being very related to the prevailing wage issue, too, which I still don't understand, because the city wants to – the city doesn't, like, have people on staff that pave roads. They don't do that.
No.
Right. They contract that stuff out to contractors, and then what they're saying now is that those contractors must pay the prevailing wage. Now, what's prevailing wage mean? Does that mean the union wage, the highest paid wage, or is that the mean wage? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's probably a mean wage. I mean, I certainly couldn't survive paying the union wage, even though I think people have this misconception about union wage as if it's like they're getting over, and they don't realize that the union wage is really a livable wage when you think about middle class existence. Union wage is not going to get you rich, even though it's a good wage. It's not a wage that's going to make you be able to like go live in, you know, Rancho Santa Fe. It's the wage that gets you to be able to live in an average middle class cost home in San Diego, in an area like Allied Gardens or San Carlos or someplace maybe, or wherever. But it's just, but you have this misconception that the union wage is like these people live in lavishly, and it's not. It's not true at all. But I think there's this misperception about that. But
why do you think people? Why do you think that's perceived that way?
Well, because you know, you have, like, for example, you can have an electrician who's non-union and one that is. That's why the businesses are always complaining about unions are killing business, mm-hmm. right? And I mean, there, not that there aren't some issues to be dealt with, but in truth is, it's basically the real basis of a union is to protect the workers. That's the whole basis of what unions are supposed to do, mm-hmm. provide safety and livable and a viable wage so the owners couldn't just run over the workers. And so consequently, when you talk about a non-union worker versus a union worker, and the argument ends up being between the two individuals, because this, you know, non-union versus union persons, they're pissed off at each other because the non-union person is mad because they're making, let's say, $10 to $15 an hour, let's say, as a non-union electrician, maybe even 20. And the other guy's making, what, 30, I think, or so, maybe 30 an hour, 25 to 30 an hour, maybe a little bit more, depending on what you're doing. But mm-hmm. the idea is that should this guy be mad at this guy or mad at the guy who's paying the dollars? Because this guy is not making really what's called a livable wage, $15 an hour, you know, even $20 an hour. You're talking $30,000 to $40,000 a year. Max, that's about $40,000 a year in the
works
high end.
Works out to about after taxes, about $550 a week.
Exactly. So you're not. So that's a couple thousand dollars a month. I mean, that's basically that's in San Diego. That's not any money. So that person is really not making a livable wage, and yet. So the question is, who's at fault? The guy who's making $30 an hour, who's making double that, which is still after taxes. If you're making double that, I mean, actually you're paying more in taxes, so you're probably only making like 1.5 to 1.75 times that amount. Mm-hmm. So it's not a lot of money when you really look at it and what it costs to live in San Diego. It just isn't. So people have a misconception, but again, the argument tends to be where there's this mad at each other this way, and not really dealing with the person who's deciding, you know, what the cost should be and what the wage should be. So I think it's sort of a fallacy in how we look at that picture and who we blame in that picture.
He says that now, because there's this prevailing wage, that they're not going to be able to fix the streets to the same degree as they would have had there not been. And then he says 5 to 10% is the amount that it's going to cost more.
Yeah.
So 5 to 10% less roads are going to get paved.
I understand what he's saying, but to me, it's a little bit unfair, because it's like saying, okay, so we either have to find people who will work for less money and be able to still get the same quality work, but make them not have a livable wage or a very viable wage to do the work. And instead of the question, it's like the city, like it's like with TMD. Why isn't there a TMD for that? You know, why is it that the costs can't be passed on?
Then they would say, you know, they should just find another job then.
Yeah, that's always the prevailing notion to go find another job. Good luck in San Diego doing that.
I mean, I think that is, it kind of comes to the crux. A lot of this, they're talking about jobs here, and how to deal with finding jobs that pay enough to live in San Diego. So,
well, you know, there's a huge problem with that, by the way. You know, when they did a study several years ago, and I think if you look at the numbers, it's probably still fairly accurate. At one point, the cost of living here was like, we were like right behind L.A. We were like 6th or 7th in the nation.
We're number 9 now.
Yeah, number 9. But our income levels were down around 25 and 30.
Yeah.
So that just simply means the disparity between what it costs to live here and what we actually make is ripped like this, mm-hmm. right? As opposed to...
Well, in media markets, what they do is they determine how much to pay people based on the advertising market. And San Diego's a 28 market as far as advertising is concerned. So what ends up happening is you're paid as though you're the 28th most expensive city in the country, even though you're the 9th. So you have this huge 20-point difference between what you should be being paid and what you are.
Yeah.
Conversely, what happens then, too, is you go to cities like Chicago, where it's actually a lot cheaper, particularly once you get out into the suburbs to live.
Yeah.
In Chicago, you can buy a 5-bedroom house for just under $200,000.
Yeah, nice 5-bedroom house.
Decent house. Nice place.
Yeah.
So you end up making a lot more money there, and your cost of living is so much lower.
Yeah.
But...
Which is so, why it thrives, well, by the way. Why the economy does well. The city does well because of, you know. Yeah.
But at the same time, they're trying to bring jobs here, right? Yeah. So you can't. Well, can they bring jobs here if labor costs are high?
Well, to me, you can't. It's always a chicken or the egg thing, right? If you pay higher wages, it means people are paying more in taxes. So you're putting more money in the city coffers to be able to help generate new jobs. So the question is it the chicken or the egg first? And it's like you have to pay. I say, oh, no, you have to pay to play. So if you're going to keep wages low, then the economy of the city is going to continue to struggle because people either have to get credit, which is credit is hard to come by these days, right?
And then, then you got to pay that money back. Exactly. So it's not like that's your money anyhow.
Well, exactly. But let's face it, the middle class of our country, what makes the middle class be the middle class for the longest time was credit, because credit allows you to live a lifestyle that kept. It's almost like creating an infrastructure based on credit that allowed for you to be able to go buy cars for your kids. Instead of driving your old parents' 62 Volkswagen, you got to go get a newer car. And now, it's to the point where when you look at how it's been set up, the idea of the middle class surviving on credit and being able to live on this permanent debtor model that I talk about sometimes, it's where you just live on credit and you never really get out of debt. That which has been the cash cow for the country for a long time. It's actually one of those things that we see that's coming back to haunt us in some way. I mean, we kill our economy when people can't afford to go and purchase things. You know, if you don't have spendable income to go and buy goods and services, then those businesses go out of business because they can't. No one's coming to them. So it's interesting to see, and particularly as credit markets dry up and as the difficulty in getting credit, gets tougher. You know, it gets harder and harder to try and sustain or build an economy if you're not willing to spend to develop an economy. And you've got to pay wages so that your people can afford to go out and buy goods and services. But if most of your income, like in San Diego, most of your income goes to paying for your home. So you have very little spendable income. And we're one of the markets where, in fact, when they did a study, this is probably like 10 years ago, and they said 80% of the people in San Diego who owned their house at that point couldn't buy the house they lived in at that point. Because when they bought low, but if they had to buy that house again during the real estate boom, they could not have afforded to purchase the home they live in. And so that was a very telling notion, that the income levels were still low, but people were able to buy when San Diego was a reasonably priced community, and now it's no longer a reasonably priced community, even though the income levels have not gone up to corroborate with the rise in the market.
So who's buying these houses then?
Well, I think there's a couple different types of people that are buying them. I think one is you have new investors that are coming in, and we're hoping to, right now, since we had dropped off after the boom, hoping to get in, waiting for it to go back up, which I personally believe it's ever going to get back up in our lifetime to where it was, because we don't have the economic infrastructure to do it. We don't have the wage level to do it. I think it's also people who either had a home that they bought low before and then are moving up and getting money out of their homes now and moving to the next level. There's also some foreign investors that are buying up property here for future risk. It'd be interesting to see how much foreign investment is going into buying a lot of downtown. A lot of those condos are dead empty. There's a lot of empty high rises.
Well,
they're
$500,000 for one bedroom.
Yeah, exactly.
They're ridiculously
overpriced. Well, yeah, and the thing is,
nobody can qualify to get in. And it's weird the way it's set up. So you either, if you make, for family three, it's $28,000 a year or less, and you can qualify to get into some of the low-income situations they have downtown.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you need basically 10% down on a $500,000 home.
Yeah.
And then you've got to be
and who's got $50,000 that you got saved? How can you save $50,000?
It's weird to look up and to see all of these empty apartments at night and one or two lights on in the whole building.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It's crazy. And so it makes you wonder.
And they've got all this new construction going up there, building more of these places that nobody's going to be able to afford to buy. So what I don't understand is how these people are getting that stuff financed to begin with. Because if I was an investor with decent, I wouldn't want to, because I would know they're not going to be able to sell these.
Yeah, here's
just take a walk around downtown at night.
You know, when I was in undergrad, like I went to UCLA, I got my Bruin thing on today. Go Bruins! And they did a study that found out that 75% of the major part of downtown LA was owned by the Japanese, and it was interesting because it makes you wonder how so. But, it's interesting to think about the idea of how much foreign investment we allow in our country and then what they actually own. It would be fascinating to find out how much of the downtown, what's being developed, is owned by foreign interests. you know, and people
but then
who
what
have
happens. What happens when those places just sit foul?
Well, some people can. Some economies can afford that. Some people take the risk. Some people have that kind of money where they can actually absorb that kind of risk, and sit back and wait for it to change or for it to grow. And are hedging their bets on the fact that it's going to grow. My contention is I don't see that happen. I don't see major. I think that little boom we had was a fictitious anomaly that was created by real estate speculators. But I also believe that you look at the truth of our economy and the wages in our city, and you know, people in San Diego don't make the kind of money to support the infrastructure of the real estate market here. They just don't. And so to see major growth or change in the economy where people think it's going to go back up in the next 10 or 20 years, I don't see that happening again. I just don't see it happening. You know, I think it's not. I think it's kind of a skewed reality that people need to really confront, and they need to really figure out how to get people in the homes and get them something that they can afford, that they can move into, and get them where they can be able to buy goods and services and help the economy grow in San Diego again.
Do you think this Filner thing is going to have an impact on partisan politics? Do you think that, because you know, Faulkner was hedging, and it seemed to be in insinuating that he doesn't think it's going to have an impact partisan wise.
Yeah,
nearly. To the effect. I don't think, do you think that, I don't think women are going to leave Democratic Party and join the Republican Party because of this.
No,
in
I don't
fact,
either.
I think this may actually end up attracting, conversely attracting more women, because they're going to have more women taking much more prominent roles, at least locally, within the Democratic Party in San Diego.
I think the same thing. I actually think that it could have a reverse effect, that they actually, because so many of the Democrats have come out, you know, who are pro-women and pro-women's rights, that are actually, it's going to show that they're not afraid to put out of office or try to force out of office an individual based on his these allegations against him. So that if I were a female looking at that, I'd be like, wow, okay, they're not afraid to throw out one of their own, meaning Democrat, in order to be able to make sure they do the right thing for women. That's pretty powerful, and I think that could really, in the long run, could serve them very well. So I don't see any it might shift a little bit towards some of these women may actually join the Democratic side, or it'll stay pretty static. So I don't, it might be maybe 1 to 3% shift to the left, but I don't think it'll be any. There's no many major damning effect on one side or the other.
So, what do you think this says about Faulkner's District 2? He's got that whole Mission Bay, Mission Beach, all the way up almost to La Jolla is his district.
Yeah.
And
must be nice.
Yeah. Well, you know, and Point Loma.
Yeah.
And so it's like there's more people that live in PB, and I think that there's more Democrats in that whole area.
Yeah.
But he's a Republican.
Yeah.
So how do you think that has happened? And that's kind of a shift from what people used to think. Do you think that's because the economy there has changed? Do you think the kind of people that live there have changed? Do you think the kind of voters are different now than we used to be?
It's a little bit of everything, actually. Here's an interesting about the PB. I mean, PB is, of course, a lot of young people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of there's part of PB, of course, that's older demographic, baby boomers that live in a certain part of PB. There's certainly an affluent
area. Are baby
area.
Boomers more likely to be Republican?
Either moderate. I think people tend to be more moderate. I mean, so I think, and again, I think because the Republican Democrats are not that far apart ideologically anymore.
What is it? Is it one party, two wings?
Basically, right. You know, exactly. So there's are you a little bit left on social issues, or are you a little bit more right on the economic issues? You know, what does that really make you, right? But I think we're adjusting. But I think that first of all, I think Faulkner recognizes that in terms of, he has to recognize where his money base comes from, and the people who participate.
He's a smart guy.
Yeah, and
he's also unusually tall.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny to see Faulkner stand next to Todd Gloria.
Yeah.
They should do like a comedy.
It would be an interesting parody, right?
It would be. It's pretty funny. Anyhow, sorry to interrupt.
No, that's okay.
With that not total non sequitur, but
Here's the thing: the young people in PB
and Todd Gloria's district has changed dramatically too, and so he's had to shift his politics more towards money, and he's kind of pissed off a lot of union people and a lot of labor.
Yeah, because he has to go where his demographics pushing him toward. Yeah. And this is the thing. I mean, when you look at, like I say, PB, you've got a lot of young people. Young people tend to be more politically disconnected as a rule on average. Yeah. I mean, most the percentages of people in the 18 to 25 that vote is probably, I don't know what the last polls were, but it's probably, you know, more than 20%.
Are they politically irrelevant?
Yeah. Well, not irrelevant,
if you were
but
running,
it's not.
You wouldn't
cater to the young voter.
Not necessarily. I think it's unfortunate that they don't. But if you were trying somebody, if you were a political strategist, you would say you've got to focus on the people who are going to get you in.
If
the people in the I remember I told you, I used to sit in my classes, and every semester I would do a segment on this issue, and I would say, how many of you out of a class of approximately say 100 students in each section of my courses, I've done this for years. I say, how many of you know your elected representatives in Congress? How many of you can name your two state senators? How many of you can name your House of Reps person? And literally, and I'm not even kidding, over a period of the last 10 years of my time in the university, or 15 years of time in my university at San Diego State, it was probably on average about 5% of the people mm-hmm. knew the representatives. And that was at the national level.
Yeah, yeah.
Local level and state
they
level.
They have no idea.
So the relevancy of politics at the local level for most young people is minuscule in many ways.
Yeah, you only need to be nice to kids so that their parents will vote for you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you throw them a little bone, but you don't, you know, and then that's an unfun. I'm not saying it's a good thing, by the way.
It's just the way it is.
So the shift, Faulkner doesn't have to go too far because the demographic base for a PB is still fairly wealthy, and they live up on the hill on the south side of Mount Soledad, you know, which is just still PB on that side, and that's what they have to deal with. So.
I know, that's got to kill them.
Oh, absolutely.
They want us to call it La Jolla, but Mount Soledad is in PB.
Sorry,
not
you guys.
La Jolla. No matter how you decide to draw the lines, it's like people who live out in University City over by UTC Mall.
Call that La Jolla.
It's not La Jolla. La Jolla is west of the 5.
Exactly.
The east village, of the 5, University City. There's nothing wrong with University City.
No, not at all.
It's a great part of town.
It's for money. It's for money. If you say La Jolla
They don't want to say they live in La Jolla, and that is not La Jolla. I remember one time trying to go meet some, and I forget this out-of-town reporter, and he was staying at, they have some of those condos out there do like corporate rentals. So he was staying at one of those. Oh, I'm at this condo in La Jolla. And he gave me this address, and I was like, that's not La Jolla. They all told him he was staying in this fancy neighborhood, and I had to explain to him, no, you're like two doors down from dorm.
Yeah, but they could actually charge more money for that place because they call it La Jolla. Mm-hmm. So that's why
they renamed all of these little communities and all that stuff.
Yep.
You know, this where we're at now, this used to be where really the kind of the working class people could live.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of apartments on them.
Not anymore.
You couldn't afford to live here now.
Yeah, especially in the houses just north of here, west of here.
My first apartment with my wife was like eight blocks due east up by Adams here, and I think we paid $475 a month for it.
Wow.
And now it's almost $1,500 for this little one bedroom.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they haven't modernized it, right?
They haven't changed a thing.
Of course, that was 1960, man, so I'm sorry. Yeah.
That was a hippie. I know, 1960. My dad, in the 70s, he worked, when he was going to college, he worked as a deckhand, was able to pay his rent, buy a car,
mm-hmm.
and a Hobie Cat,
yeah.
You know, and didn't have any student loan debt.
But see, that's the thing. That's what people don't understand now, is that helped grow the American economy.
That's the thing. He was talking about, I was talking to him about this the other day, and he was talking about how, and he lived across the street from Roosevelt's economist, the guy who developed the pension system and helped develop the Social Security system.
Wow.
That guy lived in Claremont.
Wow.
Across the street from my dad, over by R.J. Liquor, if you all are familiar with
that. How do you know about that, man?
R.J. Liquor? Because that's where my father actually worked at R.J. Liquor for a while, and that's the neighborhood he grew up in. That's where he grew up.
Oh, wow.
It was in that part of San Diego.
Cool.
Anyhow, so this guy lived across the street. My father would go over and help him with his office and organize his office. That's what he sort of like mow his lawn and then help him with his papers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then he would tell him all about the economy.
Wow.
And then my dad would get his $5 for the whatever, I guess. Anyhow, and that was his big point. This guy's big point was that the pension system and the fixed pension system was not there so that those people could benefit. It was there so that the young people could have jobs.
Yeah.
Because what the big problem was, and everybody's forgotten this, was before that, people would work until they died.
Yeah.
And young people couldn't get jobs because everybody that had a job was hanging on to that job for dear life.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't have a job, you couldn't pay your rent.
Yeah.
You know, back depression, pre-World
War II. Which we're heading
War
back into now, by the way.
And so nobody quits. Yeah. So as a result, now baby boomers aren't leaving their jobs.
Yeah.
So people in my generation can't move up in the world.
Yeah, and the people behind
baby boomers
you
aren't able to retire, and the people behind me simply can't get any
jobs.
Can't
even get in the door. Yeah.
So that was the plan.
Yeah.
And they were okay with it then. I mean, you know, and the argument is, well, you know, we don't have the money, there isn't the tax base, all that stuff. And that seemed to would make more sense to me if we were still on the gold standard.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because we're not on the gold standard and money is just kind of this created thing, I mean, it doesn't seem to hold as much water for me. But then again, I'm speaking in very kind of broad economic terms, and when you get down to the nitty-gritty, maybe things shift, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think it's, again, I go back to that chicken or egg analogy. It's like, for example, we have a lot of work in the infrastructure city that needs to get done. So why don't we hire people and get them to work, and then they're making wages, they're going to pay taxes on those wages. So you're generating income for the city and for the national government and state government by virtue of the taxing of the people who are working. So it's always my notion that, like, okay, so yeah, you have to spend money to make money, you know, but you're creating jobs that people can go and go to work, you're then creating wealth.
But Faulkner would say, now I can't, instead of creating 100 jobs, we can only create 90.
See, I would disagree. I say you create all the jobs you need because you're going to be creating wealth for the government.
But where are you going to get the money to pay those people?
Well, you take your risk. You borrow it against. You get private investors to invest, and then you say, we'll give you a percentage back on part of what you help get in this. But the main thing is that the government ultimately, even if the government has to front the money up front, you don't think the government's going to make money back on the back end of that from what people are paying in tax base? You pay somebody a worker a good wage to go fix roads and build roads. You know, the tax base that goes back to state, local, and federal government, you know, at some point starts to help pay for that, you know, and you start to make money back on, it may be a longer term vision, but at some point that's how you make back on what you spend.
Do you think this is the bigger problem, is that there isn't this kind of longer term vision?
Yeah.
Economically.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got Faulkner's done here soon, right? Yeah. He's coming up on his second term. He turns out.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he's going to do next. I'm sure he'll be fine. I mean, he's smart. He's
smart.
Totally
he's capable. Well-spoken.
Well-connected.
And I think he's, I think he's a Republican, but I think he's a, you know, I think he's a.
I found him to be very genuine.
Yeah. And I think he's a moderate Republican. He doesn't strike me as being anybody on the fringe of, you know, reality. You know, he strikes me as being very level-headed and seems about who cares about the city more than he cares about the politics. You know, even though I think he recognizes the political ramifications, but he strikes me as being a person who's.
So what do you think about this partisan division then on the city council? I mean, it was clearly down party lines for this prevailing wage.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, he's not. He and Todd Gloria do come out, you know, and they do come out together and show a united front and all. We're crossing party lines, but then when it comes down to it, prevailing wage, TMD, these things are split down party lines.
Yeah,
and they're distinctly different philosophies on how a city should be run.
Well, yeah, and I think that's part of the reality of this, the beauty of it is that it really does reflect, at least on some level, because as I said earlier, we were talking about the division, what's the difference between the Republicans and Democrats, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and so...
Well, that's the famous line, right? One party, two factions.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So with this, it actually, you could look at it as a divided factionalism, or you could say that it's one of the few times you get to see where there's a distinct philosophical or ideological difference between the two parties on this particular issue. And that's okay. I think it's a healthy, it should be, it's healthy and it should be that way. You know, as long as you're standing where you're standing for the right reason and not for all the political BS, that you're standing there because of what you, you know, sort of honestly believe about how the city or how these things should actually transpire, as opposed to just, you know, for the political glorification of it all. And I know, so for me, I think it's kind of, this is one of the few times you get to, I don't mind being seen the party line division, because it does reflect the stance of where the Democrats sort of stand on this issue and the stance of where the Republicans stand. And I think that's a healthy thing, you know, as long as they represent and understand the bigger picture in this and they're not just pandering, you know.
Well,
I mean, there's always pandering in politics. That's a reality.
Politics.
Yeah. I mean, there's always, you know, it's always a pandering part element to it. So, but you hope that they do the right thing for the right reason. But the only reason they have to do that is when we, the people, are pressuring them to do the right thing, you know. And if Faulkner gets pressured by his people in his district, he's going to have to, you know, even if he were in the far right, because of his demographic and the people in his demographic, he would have to make some shift in order to accommodate those people. Just like Gloria, you know, he's going to have to make a shift.
Yeah, he's had to shift more conservative.
Yeah, yeah.
Because his district has changed.
Yeah.
I asked him about that just before the district shift lines changed for him too, and he was talking about having to move from his place in City Heights and get a new apartment, all that stuff. And he's no. People are people. I won't have to not talk.
Yeah, no, they're not. People are not people. People are definitely not people.
People are different in City Heights than they are downtown. And he pointed this out to me. In City Heights, there's those community boards.
Yeah.
You know, you advise the city council person on whatever proposal's up.
Yeah.
And so you kind of come together. In City Heights, apparently, whoever shows up gets in. Because not enough people show up.
Yeah.
And that just kind of shows you the thinking in those areas. And it's also largely working class, largely much poorer, a lot of immigrants, a lot of different mentality. Downtown, it's hyper competitive to get on those boards.
Oh, yeah.
They have elections and debates and people lose. It doesn't happen in other parts of town.
Yeah, you know? They take your binky
and
away.
So, and so as a result, though, those people actually have a lot more power with, and Todd has really got to listen to them a lot more than even city, you would have to in City Heights. Because it's not necessarily the case in City Heights that those people represent the whole, because it's not a competitive process the way it is downtown.
Exactly. Yeah. You're right. And I think because it is so competitive downtown, it really does change how politics is handled in that situation as well.
Yeah. And I wish it was more competitive in City Heights and more competitive in Logan Heights and all of these other poorer parts of town.
Yeah.
You know,
And again, it depends on your economic viability and what are the benefits in those areas. Of course, downtown is, you know, the very political hotbed because of the need for economic development and growth. You know, I mean, you can't just build your economy on high-rise apartments with nobody living in them. I'm sorry, it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it's sad. I see all these buildings going up, and I look at them, and I know that there's no place for me there.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I think a lot of San Diegans feel, is that they are not part of this new vision in San Diego. They want to be.
Yeah.
They want to be. They just they can't afford to be.
Well, yeah. It's like they go hang out on Fifth and Market and down in the Gas Lamp. But they go.
Well, that's all for tourists.
Exactly.
That's
but even
like
as locals,
Disneyland,
when they go down there, it's like us and them, you know. It's like if you drive by Beverly Hills, but you don't ever stop in Beverly Hills, unless you want to walk and see some of the shots, but you just walk and look in the window because you can't afford to go in. Well, you look at these things and you go, wow, that's kind of a cool place, but it has nothing to do with me in San Diego that I understand, because it's not. It's almost like a completely disconnected part of a reality.
Yeah.
Especially south of Market, you know, all those along that corridor.
Yeah, yeah.
So funny, being a kid growing up here and watching. When we used to go back in the day, you had to go through downtown to go to La Jolla and PB.
Okay.
I'm not going to say how long ago that was. It was a couple days ago.
Pre-Interstate 5.
I'm not talking about that.
You had to take PCH. Did you wind your car?
Exactly.
When you
had to get the hand crank, right? But then you had to cut through Midway, Rosecrans, and go out over Ingram, and that's how you got to PB La Jolla. And it's interesting to see. I remember going, you know, a little kid, and my father taking us down there. There was nothing down there.
Yeah.
I mean, there was nothing down there. It was just a few liquor stores and a donut shop. And, you know, it was like, to see it now, and then from there it went to, you know, drug dealers and prostitutes and all kinds of nefarious characters running around there in the 70s, late 70s. Very different time to be in San Diego during that time. Very surreal. I used to think it'd be kind of funny. It's like all of a sudden, all the people come in summertime and tourists have it just like time shift back to like 1978 or 79. And they watch them all have an oh shit moment when they go and they see all those drug dealers and crazy people running around on Fifth and Market. Ooh, that would be hilarious.
I remember one time back when I was in college going into before they redeveloped that whole area on Market, going into a liquor store there and seeing a man with no nose.
A guy
without a nose. It freaked me out.
Yeah.
You know, we thought.
He's a black guy, right? No, I'm not being funny. There was an African American guy
I don't know if he was black. No. This guy was a white guy.
Okay.
He could have been light skinned, but this guy was a white guy. And he just had this little
thing over his nose.
And it would blow up whenever he would breathe.
Yeah,
it was harsh part of town.
It really was. I mean, even being a big guy, an ex-football player, I didn't want to go down there either, man. It was like nobody wanted to go down that area.
It was very rough. I mean, it's nice now, and that's kind of the irony of the whole thing, right? It's nice. It's relatively safe.
Started with Croce. Croce was the first step. Ingrid, who I think is a very wonderful lady. I was a big Jim Croce fan in the day, and getting a chance to meet her.
There's a few other problem areas still, you know, but they're kind of controlled in a way.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice, you feel safe, but the downside is
nobody can afford to live there.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody can really be there unless you are uber rich.
Yeah, or you end up house rich and money poor. So you can end up with a place down there, even if it's not like, you know, not way, if you're not on the high rise, but you're one of the other parts, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, like you are.
Yeah, you know? Well, yeah, you know? I mean, we are very lucky because we got into our place a long time ago, uh-huh, and we're in under moderate income,
yeah,
basically,
yeah,
you know, which is assisted, well, yeah, rental assistance for me, and I, you know, it's not like I don't have a bad, I have a decent job, and,
yeah, yeah,
and our place is, you know, that's the only reason we're there. If we didn't get in there at the time we did, we simply wouldn't be there.
Yeah, there's no, I mean, imagine what it costs now if you had to go in there.
Same place, same exact size place that we have directly above us rents for almost $3,500 a month. So, you know, and it's just because we've been there so long.
Yeah.
You know, and that they, you know, because there are regulations as far as how much you can raise rent per year.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, my, and all in all, I like the place.
Yeah.
You know,
But around the block from there, there's some still the areas in that area just north.
Sketchy.
Right? Yeah, it's a little bit sketchy. You
get
know?
Sketchy. A lot of ex-cons move in.
Yeah, Matt Hedge
lives down around the corner. Every now and then I see him, freaks me out. You see him walking around his chihuahua.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's the guy they made live in the trailer because nobody wanted him to live in their neighborhood. He was convicted of raping and killing 2 10-year-old boys.
Yeah.
And he's walking his chihuahua downtown.
Those two Claremont kids.
I think so, yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, so those are the kind of people that end up living in a lot of the SROs, and that's the low income thing. So there's nothing else there. It's either SROs, you know, Matt Hedge types, ex-cons, you know, or
plus you have a transit hub there, so you get people in and out of the transit hub.
Uber rich, and that's kind of it. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It's a strange dichotomy if you think about it. Uh-huh.
Right? Either that, or you know, we end up moving out to El Cajon.
No, you don't want to do that.
I don't want to move out. I don't know. I mean, we think about leaving town all the time.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Go someplace where you can go to Chicago.
Yeah. France.
I'd love to go. I can get papers, man. That's what everybody forgets. Americans don't realize this, right? You need papers to work in other countries.
Yeah.
You can't just go show up and work.
Yeah, I wish.
Doesn't
I wish
work.
You could,
doesn't
you
doesn't know? The world doesn't function that way.
No, it doesn't.
There's a bureaucracy. You need papers to work in, and it's much more difficult to get papers to work in Europe than it is in the United States.
Yeah, it is. It really is. It really is difficult. They have what they call the highly skilled migrant program, where for specialized people, it's a little easier to get in, but the average everyday citizen can't just walk in and go, "Hey, I want to go live here."
It doesn't work that way at all. Highly specialized is like doctors.
Exactly.
And certain kinds of lawyers if they're doing certain kinds of intellectual property.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So maybe you.
Yeah, right. I say you. Hey, what?
There's a UCLA alumni club in Paris, I think.
And there's actually one up. We have several worldwide. We have our alumni association is extensive.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazingly so.
Yeah. Well,
so it's a good thing.
When you move to France, buy a house big enough because
my family
will come squat.
Hey, man, we'll go live down in the south.
I love the south.
By Nice, you know, Montpellier.
Nice is nice. Montpellier is nice too. I've been to both those. We live near Marseille, so I love the south a lot. I love that mix too. You get this weird people directly from Africa, like there.
Yeah.
And it's very, very cool.
Yeah,
very
kind
cool
of a hip,
place.
Kind of a very culturally diverse place. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Very, very neat. We never crossed over to Africa, although. You know,
Hey, speaking of which, I'd like to hit on a couple of things.
Oh yeah,
real quick, just a couple of things. No, because
the world exists outside of San Diego.
Well, actually, a couple of things. One is I was going to say real quickly about education, but the education bill that passed.
The student loan.
Yeah,
the student loan thing. That was, I think. You see, for me, I think they should just, if anybody wants to win over basically every middle class vote in the country.
Yeah.
Wait until whatever current politician is in office, wait 2 weeks before, and then just pursue forgiving all student loan debt.
Yeah.
I mean, because that would solve such a huge – it's such a burden on our society. You've got these people with hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loan debt and no prospect of paying them off.
Well, yeah. Now, again, this goes back to that debtor model where – People who were fortunate to have a house where they had some equity in the house, who have kids, have had to now borrow, because most of them are house rich and money poor.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. You know, they've had to borrow money to put their kids through school.
Yeah, because you can't qualify for financial aid because you make a certain income level, mm-hmm. but they assume that income level is all your money, like free money. You don't realize you've got a house that you're paying a mortgage on that's eating up 70% of that money, so you don't have, you're just barely making it. But you can't get financial aid for your kids like that. You have to take loans out. You
know? Yeah.
And so you're usually, if you've got any equity, you're going to take it out that way. And it really has that's such an unfortunate thing. I think it's also unfortunate that if you have a kid who's super bright, who has capability of going to one of the best schools and then can't afford to go.
Well, it's cheaper. Know, it's cheaper to send your kid to school abroad than it is. It's foreign. I think that it's cheaper to spend money on foreign tuition in the UK than it is to send your kid to school. I want to say definitely at a private school.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know how it compares to like a state school. And if you pay in-state tuition in California,
yeah,
totally different on the East Coast. I've known people on the East Coast that have gone to school in the UK simply because it's cheaper to go to school in the UK than it is to go to an in-state school.
Well, I was looking at an executive.
And I don't know how that equates in California, but I think it's really, really close.
Well, I was looking at an executive program at Oxford. You know, I lecture at Oxford every summer, and I've been looking at executive. They have an executive international program that I'm really interested in. And I think it was like, it's an accelerated program, and part of it, you do travel back and forth a few times. You don't have to live there, not regularly, even though I would love to, but it's still. I think it was like $30,000. But that was, again, if you're talking about private education in the United States, it'd be comparable.
Oh, that'd be nothing. Yeah.
On one hand.
And then you could say Oxford.
Yeah.
Which I think counts a lot more than a lot of private schools. I mean, that's like saying Yale.
Yeah, it is. It really, truly is. So it's kind of like the idea of recognizing that, if your kids graduate from college and they're that in debt, and those who either have to have their parents are forever strapped, or the kids are forever strapped, they can't get on their feet. They can't they can't become a viable part of the economy, and so they become a burden because they have to then get help from the government in order to get ahead. So the government ends up having to spend money. So the question is, how do you want to spend it? Do you want to spend it helping them get jobs so they can have a livable wage and pay money to taxes, or do you want to have it where they can't afford it and then they have to come and use government help? And most people in the middle class who are struggling with getting government help, or who do get government help, don't really want government help. They have it because they don't have any choice. Because the cost of living are so outlandishly high for the things that we need. And the two things that we deal with every day are housing costs and student loan costs. They're the two biggest drivers that kill our economy. It's the most bizarre thing you think about. I mean, cost of cars hasn't gone up the way the cost of housing has gone up.
Mm-hmm.
Cars have been pretty static in terms of the cost of cars. It's been pretty static for some time now. Maybe even going down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Get a nice car, you can get a new car.
So why is it locally they don't deal with this issue? They could have a huge impact on this kind of thing.
Oh, I know. Because everybody, the real estate market is their cash cow, And when you start thinking about, people say real estate is still the best thing at going. And in many ways it still is. But because of that, the politicization of that and how it turns and creates an economic blowback as a result, it ends up, certain groups of people get rich as a result of it, but the blowback to the overall economy and growth of our economy is cut off because no one can afford to live in those places. And
what's the threshold then for that issue to become the top issue for local politics? Is there a threshold for that? You know what I mean? With Clinton, it's jobs, stupid, right? And that's sort of along the same lines as what you're saying here.
Yeah, you'd have to take you there. You'd have to have a soaring unemployment rate that would just go crazy, where people really could. I mean, where the functioning of the local economy would be so damaged by, just like it was at the height of the real estate market. I mean, the San Diego economy really got hit during that time. I mean, people really, our economy really was in the toilet. I mean, even though people were still buying at that level. But these consumers are really taking a bath. They're really taking a bath. And I think it would take a major crisis of some sort, economic crisis, for that to change. But I don't, because, and it would change. It would take a philosophical change in how we look at how we look at real estate in this country too.
Do you think it's how we look at real estate, or do you think it's how we look at work? You see what I mean?
Well, can you
well, how is it we look at people who aren't able to find jobs?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a definite, everyone has people make judgments about someone who doesn't have a job.
Yeah, they do. I mean, or the working poor, they make judgments about the working poor. People who work I know somebody. I know more people who are working, you know, two and three jobs to try and support their families, and no way that the kids are by themselves and can't afford to get ahead, and they're just stuck in the middle, and they're going to be working to the day they die. Like, we've gone back to this pre-World War II model of how our society exists. It's almost it's fascinating and frightening in many ways if you think about it, just how far backwards we've kind of gone in this issue. I mean, again, our generation, the baby boomers, is probably going to work till we, you know, the
like
it's funny.
Your generation. My generation.
Yeah. My generation, young man, is now being.
Thank you, sir.
I like that, sir. That was
good. Yeah, yeah.
But you know,
used to that.
Well, I know. I think it's really gotten to the point where. I remember being in my early 20s, and Reagan was talking about, you know, well, we've got, you know, we're 55 age retirement thing. You know, I kept thinking, I can't wait when I can get there. Yeah. You know, it's like those realities are just now. It's like if you're 75 and can retire, you'll be lucky because what? Baby boomers are living longer, can't afford to give up their jobs because pensions. So you can't get new people into the infrastructure of jobs. Teenagers can't get jobs. You know, I mean, it's like the blowback ends up being going further and further back, but. You know, the cost of living is just so high. There's no, then they haven't created any new, aside from not creating that many new jobs that are viable in terms of income, you can't get anybody to glut in the market. It's all backed up. You can't get us out of the market and to get new people into the market. You know, and that's, we just have to work longer and harder for less money. And we've been in this country, we work longer and harder for less money than most of the major industrialized countries on the planet. You know, but we're also one of the few that hamstrings their entire society by virtue of housing and by also virtue of student loan. Kids in Germany and other parts, they have to pay a certain amount to go to school, but they're not indebted forever in order to make that happen.
No,
they haven't built their economic model on that reality.
Yeah.
Our economic model is built on, you know, how do we keep permanent debt so we can keep generating, you know, cash for the government. And that's, I don't know, I think that's a really flawed way to look at it in some ways. Yeah, that's how I feel about it.
All right. Well, I was really glad Faulkner was able to take the time with us. You know, he's a nice guy. He's good to talk to.
Yeah. Smart guy.
Smart guy. And, you know, I like you said, he's sincere.
Yeah.
And he believes in what he's doing. He thinks he's doing, you know, the right thing.
Yeah.
There's a girl in a bikini, like 10 feet from us right now.
Really?
Yeah.
I hadn't noticed.
Have to come. This park just got a lot better.
You mean that yellow and pink?
Yeah.
Oh, that one. Okay. I didn't see what you're talking about. Okay. I'll look at those things. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, you're single on that.
But next week, I know we're running out of time. Week, let's get to.
I'm running out of tape.
Oh, hey.
I'm running out of room.
I know. Let's get to Egypt and Iran next week.
There's
some things to talk about internationally that we haven't gotten to in a while.
Yeah,
you know, that'd be great to get to. So let's get to it at some point.
We will, hopefully. Yeah. Well, next week, Filner will still be in douchebag rehab. So
yeah,
we won't have to.
It's one more week, huh?
No. He goes in on Monday.
Oh, that's right. He's not even in yet.
He goes in to Monday the 5th, and then he's in for 2 weeks. And then everything is forgiven, and he's all better.
I know. Isn't that great?
It's like a miracle.
I mean,
amazing.
You find God, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Fine.
Man.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Crazy days.
Yeah. He's gonna be in there and then announce his resignation while he's in rehab so no one can go after him. Watch.
Well, you figure if that's the way to do it, that'd be a smart way to try and at least save.
It's not going to solve the problem.
It won't solve the problem.
It won't quell any media attention, at least locally, but it might calm things down on a national level because then they may lose interest nationally.
Yeah.
But locally, everyone's going to want to know when he gets back, where he is, and all that stuff. But, you know.
And hopefully he'll go quietly into the sunset and live wherever he lives.
Yeah.
You know?
Wherever. I don't know. I mean, I think he still owns a house in IB.
Yeah.
I know he's got that apartment in downtown.
Yeah.
So who knows what his big plan is, right?
Yeah. Maybe he'll leave San Diego.
Maybe he'll go back to Paris.
Yeah.
We can stay with him.
On his own dime.
Or the Iranians.
Right?
The pro-Iranian democracy movement in Paris is the one who... He had to give that money back.
Yeah.
He gave them... It was only like $400 he gave back, too. So it's just like... I feel like it just feels like such a token
yeah.
move.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Still paid for the two cops to go with him. I mean, it, look, they're talking about a $20,000 bill, and he gave back $400. What? Something's a little off here, dude.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. You're pissed because you only got $400. You know, man, come on, I'm surprised.
$20,000 to Paris for a, what? Less than a week? Yeah, that must have been one hell of a trip. I want to go spend $20,000.
Like, yeah, I want to trip like that.
We should do that.
Man.
We ever get the chance. You know what he says? We should do it. We should do one of these in Tijuana.
Yeah, that'd be
and
really
do it.
Cool.
It'd be interesting if we could make that work.
Yeah.
Food for thought.
We just won't do it by the Maquiladoras or any place where we can get, like, kidnapped or, you know.
No. We'll do it at the museum.
Yeah.
I bet we could do it at the museum.
You know, I told Matt, by the way, just earlier today, I said we should go do these through our podcast at some of the historical sites in San Diego. So you might find us at some of the historical places that have significance as well.
Yeah. Old Trolley Barn Park.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if they kept the old trolley barn here, but
exactly.
Right here in Adams, because they used to be trolley tracks. They still run up and down the street. Every time they dig up the street, they find them.
Yeah. I think my dad probably rode on them.
It'd be nice
the day,
if
probably.
They put the trolleys back.
Wouldn't that be great?
That'd be great.
I mean, it would be really great to be able to have people be able to get across town. That would also help generate income in certain areas that need to have, some economic growth and help clean up the areas by generating some, some
revenue. What? Even if they were like little cars like they do at Disneyland, just a little, they're just a bunch of seats and you just kind of, the four wheels are not on tracks.
Yeah.
I don't know. There you go. We have just solved San Diego's economic problems.
Exactly.
Disneyland trolley cars.
Yeah. I want the Autopia, the little auto things. The little Autobahn thing. That's what you want, the little cars.